Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining us here at the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take ourselves too seriously. We don't tolerate commercial interruption. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I want to start out with Mitt Romney's looks. We got a robocall from Mitt Romney, and I thought it was actually Mitt on the line, because Mitt Romney sounds like a robocall. Really creepy. We've been getting a 10 or 20 Republican solicitations a day on the old home phone. So if you're trying to reach us on our home phone, we've got it shut off, and we only look at it once every few days. Because who can take it? It's so depressing. I mean, here I find myself, I am a member of the Republican Party. Now, I'm only a member of the Republican Party so that I can go to the caucus and introduce personhood, what do they call it at the caucus? They have another name for it. I don't know. It's really just a hobby for me with the Republicans. But to think that they can beat Obama by nominating a liberal like Mitt Romney is really depressing. It's just not going to happen. I'm still clinging to hope that Mitt Romney will not be the nominee. But I'm backing off that bold prediction. Yes. But I will not back off my bold prediction that Mitt Romney will never be the president of the United States. And my extremely attractive audio engineer pointed out last week that when she looks at Newt Gingrich on TV and when she hears him speak, Newt Gingrich looks like the next president of the United States. Just by looks. We're just going by looks. Mitt Romney, on the other hand, he looks like the guy who lost to Barry Ho. Yeah, it's a foregone conclusion in the mind of my extremely attractive audio engineer, who's very politically astute and savvy. You don't think Santorum looks like the next president?
No, not quite.
Not quite? No. Is it the sweater vest? Is that, you're down on the whole sweater vest thing? I think he's backed off the sweater vest.
He looks like a vice, though.
He looks like a vice president? Mm-hmm. Okay, well. He looks like an actor playing the vice president. Anyway, it's just really depressing. It's almost as bad as football. I know there was a game on today, but Tim Tebow wasn't playing, so we didn't watch. We're mildly interested. Mildly interested. I haven't really paid that much attention. So Republican politics is about as boring as football. Although, the implications are dire. They are dire. Just to think that just 2 years ago we had all the Tea Party activity and all of that. And I mean, what's become of that? Now we're going to nominate Willard Mitt Romney against Barry Ho? Please. How far have we fallen? This is almost as bad as 1994, 1995, when I had all these great hopes that the Republicans were going to save the country from Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. And, the whole Republican Revolution petered out before it even got started. It seems like the Tea Party is about of the same caliber. And it's just depressing. You know, it brings to mind a quote from a friend of mine. I was on the phone with him. We were discussing the dire straits of Republican politics and saving America and all that. And he said, Doug, God's not going to save America. Be a good father. So I guess that's my advice to all of you out there who are depressed over the whole situation. God is not going to save America. Be a good father, and maybe he'll raise up a generation apart from the ones who've been wandering in the wilderness. He'll raise up a new generation that might be able to save America. Anyway, enough of my rambling. I got to Newt. I got to Mitt. I don't think I'll mention them anymore in the broadcast. I actually hope Santorum beats Romney head-to-head there in Missouri. That could change things. But I don't hold out much hope. All right. Oh, should I should mention this on Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was walking to the stage at a political appearance there in Las Vegas or Nevada, somewhere there in Nevada. And he was glitter bombed. Have you heard of this glitter bombing? Glitter bombing is when a queer throws glitter on a politician who he suspects of opposing homosexual marriage. And I've just got to say to whoever that queer was that threw that glitter on Mitt, you are one confused homo. Because Mitt Romney is the only governor in the history of the United States to actually institute homosexual marriage from the executive office. So that was one confused homo out there in Nevada. And from what I understand, there's lots of them out there. Not just in Nevada, but hither and nigh. I'm surrounded by them. I went to pick up my laundry the other day at the laundromat. And lo and behold, there is a transgendered freak working behind the counter. Now, this is the laundromat where I've gone for how many years now? 4 or 5 years. It is a laundromat. Well, it's not a laundromat. What are you, a cleaner's? I'm sorry. You're right.
I don't
actually participate in the washing, pressing, drying, folding of clothing, so I'm a little bit sketchy on the vernacular. You're right. It's a cleaner's. I went to the cleaner's, and this is the cleaner's where I've been going there for several years, and there's always Christian music playing on the speakers. And so I'm assuming that the Koreans who own the joint are probably Christians. But even they can't find decent help without hiring a man with painted fingernails and makeup on his face. And a suspicious lisp. Really, I mean, you can't get away from it. I tell you, Colorado's been overrun. It's just annoying. All right, it is. It's gross. It's nothing to laugh about. What are you going to do, though? If you don't laugh, you're going to drive yourself insane. All right, let's move on to the news of the week. I want to start in New York from NBC. Law enforcement sources report that 30-year-old John Davis approached two men at about 1:15 in the morning and asked them for change. When the men said no, John Davis asked to borrow a cell phone. And they hesitated. Well, John Davis grabbed the cell phone and tried to run off with it. This is according to NBC in New York. One of the men lunged to get the phone, and the crook put him in a headlock. Yeah, that's right. The thief put the victim in a headlock. Well, then, sources say, the other man, who's a former high school wrestler, pulled Davis off his friend and put the would-be robber in a headlock. And apparently, Mr. Davis, the robber, choked to death in the headlock. The two men called police and stayed on the scene until authorities arrived. Mr. Davis was pronounced dead at the hospital. No charges have been filed against the former wrestler or his friend. By the way, John Davis, the crook, he had prior arrests for aggravated assault and theft, and he was recently released from his last stint in jail just this past July 22nd. So in a sense, the catch-and-release program in effect there in New York, the catch-and-release program for petty criminals, ultimately contributed to this fellow's death. Because if he'd have been punished properly, he might not have been trying to steal a cell phone from a wrestler who put him in a very effective headlock. I don't know if they have any video of this, but that would be a move you want to learn, you know, for self-defense purposes. Anyway, no charges have been filed. And Mr. Davis remains dead, partly because of the catch-and-release program for petty criminals there in the formerly great state of New York. Another story. This is a bit depressing. This is from WTOP out in Maryland. Maryland State Police say that both drivers in a fatal wrong-way crash a couple weeks ago, both drivers were under the influence of alcohol. So, you know, this goes back to my theory. You know, society can survive a certain percentage of people being criminals and doing bad things. We can survive that. But when a majority, or like in this case, everyone involved is behaving in a criminal manner, well, a bad ending is inevitable. So both drivers were drunk, and, three people in the car that was headed the wrong way were killed, a 19-year-old and a couple of 18-year-old kids. And the other driver, a 55-year-old, he died on the way to the hospital. So we've got four people killed, and both of the drivers were operating outside the bounds of prudent behavior, prudent and lawful behavior. It's actually a sad story. And speaking of sad stories, folks, this week there was two tragic events that struck children close to home, close to the McBurney family. One child is actually a member of our church, and another child, the child of a beloved friend of the church and of mine, and my extremely attractive audio engineer. Both children suffered what could have been life-threatening injuries, and we got emails over the last few days to pray for the kids and pray for their doctors. And I kind of have a standard prayer that has evolved over time for instances like this. But I felt it wholly inadequate as I prayed last night for both of these children who were hurt in terribly tragic accidents. And I found myself straying from my standard prayer, and I began to praise God and worship Him and give Him glory for the amazing design that He built into the human body, its ability to recover from injury, especially the little ones. Little kids are virtually indestructible and capable of recovering from fantastic injuries. And I just worshiped and glorified God for that, and fervently prayed and thanked Him for the biology that He designed. And I just gave Him glory. And it brought to mind a verse from the Bible. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever even think about possibly uttering a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. From the book of James, James says, "The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." A righteous man. I'm looking around. Where is there a righteous man? I want to pray for these kids. I need a righteous man. And then I remember that Jesus Christ told me that He has declared me righteous, that He has already seated me in the heavenlies. And so I prayed even harder, and I glorified God, and I worshiped Him, and I praised Him for the ability He has given all of us to help each other and to recover from injuries. The incredible biological series of events that occurs in the healing process. And I kept in mind the whole time, even though I may not feel righteous, even though I may not act righteous, Jesus Christ says I am righteous, and God has put all things in His hands. And if He declares me righteous, then I will pray, and I will glorify Him. And no matter the outcome, I know that Jesus Christ has promised to restore all. Anything that is lost, whether it is physical, psychological, spiritual, mental, anything that we lose in this physical plane, Jesus Christ has promised, and He has the ability, and He has proven the ability to restore all things. And so I prayed that prayer. I prayed it last night, late into the night. I prayed it early this morning. I prayed it before church. I prayed it after church. I prayed it right before I went on the air today, because I remembered that I am a righteous man, and the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And so my prayers go out to those families who've been stricken by these horrible tragedies of their children. And I hug my children a little closer today. And I would ask all of you out there just to remember that if you're looking around for a righteous man, don't look to Washington, D.C. And don't look to the pulpit. Don't even look to your left and to your right. Just look down into the Bible, because it looks back at you like a mirror, and it says, from the lips of Jesus Christ, I have declared you are righteous. I have seated you in the heavenly places, and the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. As we continue to pray and we continue to work and we continue to bless all of those who know that God is real and who worship Him as God. And now let's talk about, Tim Tebow. I didn't plan it this way. This is just the way it came down. I've got the story from Reuters. The headline screams, forget Romney or Obama, the voters want Tim Tebow. That's right. The Denver Broncos, according to Reuters, the Denver Broncos are a 50-1 long shot for next year's NFL title. But if Tim Tebow swapped the pigskin for politics, he just might be a shoo-in for the White House. That's right. They're asked which NFL playoff quarterback they would choose for president in the coming election. More than a quarter of the voters voted for Tebow. That's according to the results of the Reuters Ipsos poll of likely voters. It was an online survey of about 2,500 people, and Tebow walked away with it. Asked if he would consider a political career at some stage, Tim Tebow said, quote, maybe one day in the future, not right now, though, unquote. And, Tim, we want you to stay here in Denver, and I would never want Tim Tebow to be demoted from the position he has achieved as a preacher of the gospel of peace. I would never want to see him demoted to such a lowly pedestrian office as the President of the United States. There are bigger things in Tim Tebow's future, and they probably do include at some point that NFL title, but much, much bigger things in store for Tim. I wouldn't even want to see Tim Tebow on the same stage with Mitt Romney. Although I've got to admit, it was really neat watching Tim Tebow show Alec Baldwin how to Tebow. Now, I know it was all a setup, and it was cute and it was funny. At the NFL awards show, Alec Baldwin got down on one knee and lifted his arms in kind of a half Tebow or a semi Tebow, a demi Tebow. And Tim strutted across the stage and he grabbed Alec's head and he grabbed Alec's hand and he kind of folded Alec into the proper Tebowing position. And I couldn't help but think how it looked like if Timmy wanted to, that with just a flick of his wrist, he could pop Alec Baldwin's squirrely little head right off his neck. It was just fun to watch. And of course, Tim says, well, I don't have much to say. We've got Alec Baldwin praying, then that's pretty cool. I mean, they were just a great guy. What can you say? I know, you people who hate Tim Tebow, I hate you. Well, I don't know if I hate you. I feel sorry for you that you can't participate in the joy of watching Tim Tebow grow up. I think it's really going to be fun. All right, and speaking of Tim Tebow growing up, the only reason Tim Tebow is growing up is because his mother chose life. When she was advised, by the way, by doctors, that it might be a good idea for her to abort, to kill Tim Tebow, because Tim was sick and he was making mom sick, and they suggested that she might want to just abort him. And, well, she didn't. And, Timmy might have been a little bit sickly there in the womb. He's recovered quite nicely. Getting back to the reason I was glorifying God in my prayers, the amazing ability that God built into the human anatomy to recover and even excel. And wouldn't you agree that every child deserves that opportunity, whether they're sick, whether they're unloved, whether they're unwanted? Don't they deserve the opportunity to just live. I mean, I had a debate online with an advocate of legalized child killing, and they said you want to give an unborn child. No, they didn't call it. They said you want to give a fertilized egg the right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And I said, well, wait a minute, just life. How about we just start with life? Can't we just agree that everyone deserves a chance to live? Well, the folks in Arizona may have an opportunity to vote on that. State representative Howie Fisher. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not Howie Fisher. I don't have the name for Hamina. Well, this is embarrassing. Let's see. Oh, State Rep Steve Smith out in Arizona wants to introduce a personhood bill in Arizona, and it's freaking out the baby killers, like the one who wrote this article. Maybe it's a letter to the editors from the Tucson Citizen. And this baby killer, she says, quote, "I never cease to be amazed by how indiscriminately anti-choicers spew out uninformed medical opinions. It's like they think that a lifelong burning obsession with what ladies are doing somehow bestows a license to practice medicine on them. And the overwhelming consensus of medical science is that emergency contraception works by suppressing ovulation." She says, "You can subscribe to an alternate theory that it kills a tiny little fertilized egg people. You can subscribe to that all you want to, but the doctors and the scientists are still right and you are still wrong." She's upset that a personhood law would ban the use of what the baby killers call emergency contraception. And emergency contraception works by not killing a tiny little fertilized egg person. It works by preventing the implantation or actively chemically assaulting an unborn baby. And I could go on with this lady's letter to the editor, but I don't want to give her any more ink. They can't stand the thought of even one abortion being stopped. And here we are threatening to stop all of them. So you can imagine how freaked out they are. Well, that's Arizona. Let's go to, the Salt Lake Tribune. Out in Salt Lake City, Utah, this is, freshman Senator Aaron Osmond, Republican from South Jordan, a state senator in Utah, said he was approached by individuals who he would not name seeking personhood legislation, and he has opened a bill file entitled Personhood Amendments to begin a dialogue with interested groups. He said he hasn't decided if he will need a constitutional amendment or statutory change to make the definition, but he believes the question needs to be clarified in statute. And here's what Senator Aaron Osmond says, quote, he says, "That's where we're headed. There's no doubt we're trying to define when life begins, when a person becomes a person." Now, that is a question that the child-killing industry is terrified to even have debated. They don't even want to have the conversation. Carrie Galloway, director of Planned Parenthood of Utah, says she hopes to meet with Osmond about the issue. She says this would impact a whole lot more than abortion. They always do that. You notice that? They always want to change the subject. She says this will impact a whole lot more than abortion. It'll impact contraception, in vitro fertilization. It'll impact the lives of so many people, which is the reason one of these things has never passed. So she emphasizes that it has never passed, which is a statement of fact. Can't argue with that. Now, the article closes with this final caveat. In Mississippi last year, a proposed personhood amendment was rejected by 55% of the voters. So think about what that really means. Yes, the amendment was defeated, but it only lost by 6 points. Now, that's not a landslide, ladies and gentlemen. And everyone in the child-killing industry knows that personhood is guaranteed to win the next time it is voted on in Mississippi, because the new language that has been crafted and developed by the leadership of the personhood movement has taken away so many of the talking points regarding in vitro fertilization, regarding contraception, regarding emergency life-saving medical care for a pregnant woman. The new language here in Colorado is awesome. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, go to coloradortl.org. Check it out. It's guaranteed to win next time in Mississippi because of the new language and because that drunken moron Haley Barbour is out of office and very well may be incarcerated by the next time we vote on personhood out in Mississippi. So keep your chin up and don't give up because we are guaranteed a victory the next time we go to battle in Mississippi. We're going to battle here in Colorado and perhaps several other states this election cycle. And so the child-killing industry is absolutely apoplectic that we're even having the conversation, and here we are about to stuff this new law right down their throat and make them accept not just one less abortion, but take away their right to kill any innocent people. And that brings us to the Susan J. Komen Foundation and the eruption this past week. You'll remember Komen, basically they released a press release saying that they were going to no longer fund Planned Parenthood. At which point an awful lot of people who supported the Komen Fund said, what? Komen supports Planned Parenthood? So I'm thankful that the story broke and just that it would alert a lot of Komen supporters that they actually support the child-killing industry that kills about 500,000 girls every year. The entire industry. Planned Parenthood kills over 150,000 girls every year. So I hope that a lot of their donors were shocked to find such a cozy relationship in that Komen was funding Planned Parenthood. Here's the story from MSNBC, the latest development. An apparent reversal of Susan J. Komen's Fund for the Cure funding cuts to Planned Parenthood. The founder and CEO of Komen said last Friday that the group would amend the criteria that sparked the firestorm. That's right. It looks like they're backing off their pledge to stop funding Planned Parenthood. She says, quote, here's the statement, from Komen, the official statement, regarding continued funding of Planned Parenthood. Komen says, quote, we will continue to fund existing grants, including those of Planned Parenthood, and preserve their eligibility to apply for future grants. Well, that's interesting because amongst all the hullabaloo, what we noticed as I looked at this with friends of mine in the personhood movement was that Komen had already guaranteed that any grants that were ongoing would continue and that in the future funds would be restricted. And this statement basically says the same thing. So I'm not sure that the Komen Fund has backed off their pledge to stop funding Planned Parenthood. Now, you'll remember, Komen officials, and this is back to the MSNBC article, Komen officials had originally said they cut off funding to Planned Parenthood because of the group is the subject of a federal investigation. It was not immediately clear what the change would actually mean for the future of Planned Parenthood funding. Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, said that her baby-killing business was grateful to resume her long-standing relationship with Komen and that she anticipated continued future funding. She said, quote, I really take them at their word that this is all behind us, that we have a good relationship now. I'm going to make them an offer that they can't refuse. So Planned Parenthood, they think that Komen is going to fund them, but I think what this has revealed, ladies and gentlemen, is that within the Komen group, which, by the way, has become a part of the breast cancer industry. I don't know that they're focused on curing or preventing cancer at all as much as they're focused on fundraising and propagating their own jobs and retirement. Not unlike the National Right to Life Committee, who is really just a shell organization built around fundraising and not really interested in saving the lives of innocent children who are threatened by the baby-killing industry. And it's a sad state of affairs for Komen that they've been revealed. And it's a great day in that the facade, that Planned Parenthood has so carefully crafted over the past century is beginning to crack. And when those cracks appear, you can bet that the crumbling and the downfall is not far behind, because when the mask comes off and the average American, whether you call yourself pro-choice or pro-life, when the average American finds out what actually goes on inside the doors of Planned Parenthood, that house will fall, and great will be the fall of it.
Cry, baby, cry, when you got to get it out. I'll be your shoulder, you can tell me all. Don't keep it in you. Well, that's the reason why I'm here. Hey, hey, are you ready for a new sensation? Right now, gonna take you on a new sensation.
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, celebrating as the cracks appear in the facade of Planned Parenthood. You know, they claim they do all these, breast exams, mammograms. Here's what the article says. According to Planned Parenthood, its health centers perform more than 4 million breast exams over the past 5 years, including nearly 170,000 as a result of Komen grants. The grants totaled, by the way, over $500,000 last year. And keep in mind that Planned Parenthood gets about $500 million in federal money. All this money to go to things other than abortion. But if you go to liveaction.com and you look at the undercover work of Lila Rose, you'll know that Planned Parenthood does not perform breast exams or mammograms. Planned Parenthood hands out condoms and kills babies. Oh, and they don't hand out condoms, by the way. You have to buy them. And you have to pay for your abortions in cash.
It's cheap liberal.
They're cheap liberals. Yeah. Anyway, the cracks have appeared, ladies and gentlemen. And that house will fall. All right. Now, more news from the Planned Parenthood scene from our politics file. Nancy Pelosi made some comments to commemorate the 100-year anniversary of the Girl Scouts. Representative Nan was featured at a reception for the 100th anniversary. Now, after the event, CNSNews.com, which is where this story comes from, CNSNews.com asked Ms. Pelosi. They said, quote, "The Girl Scouts has had some ties to Planned Parenthood. Do you think that's a valuable relationship to have working together?" And Pelosi replied, "The Girl Scouts have relationships with many organizations, and yes, I think they're all very valuable." At which point, someone unplugged her, put her on a dolly, and rolled her into the back of a van to take her to her next appearance. Now, CNS News reports that in 2010, a panel sponsored by the Girl Scouts at the United Nations Commission featured a Planned Parenthood pamphlet called Healthy, Happy, and Hot that was meant to be distributed to young girls because they want to tell young girls that they're hot. And now, for many of us geezers, you may not realize the full implications of the term hot. But from what I understand in the current vernacular amongst the tweens and the teens and the 20-somethings, that means that people want to have sex with you. And I believe that is the case with both the leadership of the Girl Scouts and the United Nations Commission and Planned Parenthood. Now, a portion of the pamphlet read thusly, quote, "Many people think sex is just about intercourse, but there are lots of different ways to have sex. There is no right or wrong way to have sex. Just have fun, explore, and be yourself." So that's a pamphlet made available to the Girl Scouts from Planned Parenthood. That's the kind of propaganda that they're inculcating young women with. And that is why that this house will fall. Now, former CEO of Girl Scouts, Kathy Cloninger, is on record as having said, quote, We have relationships with our church communities, the YWCAs, and with Planned Parenthood organizations across the country to bring information-based sex education programs to girls. So how many of you out there knew that the Girl Scouts of America was a conduit for information-based sex education programs for girls? I thought it was about teaching them to knit and crochet and cook and bake and change diapers and maybe go camping. But that's not what the Girl Scouts are about. The Girl Scouts are about promoting a liberal, socialist, a sexual libertine agenda. And it's about setting girls up for pain, misery, molestation, disease, unwanted pregnancy, the whole gambit, and abortion, killing their own children. So if your kids are in the Girl Scouts, what the hell are you thinking about? Pardon my French. I apologize. I get a little bit... I might edit that out later. I'm sorry. Flag the tape. All right. Now, we've had Nancy Pelosi and the Girl Scouts. We've had Susan G. Komen. These are people in the upper reaches of the liberal constellation hierarchy. And now we go to the North Star of the socialist, sexual libertine, baby-killing liberals. Barry Ho, Barack Hussein Obama, also known as Barack Hussein Sotoro, President of the United States, at the National Prayer Breakfast last week, Barry Ho claimed support from on high to defend two of his most controversial legislative achievements. This is from BuzzFeed, from Zeke Miller, online, BuzzFeed.com. And here's what Barry Ho has to say about his accomplishments and how they might be viewed from the heavenlies. He says, and quote, "And so, when I talk about our financial institutions playing by the same rules as the folks on Main Street, when I talk about making sure that insurance companies aren't discriminating against those who are already sick, or making sure that unscrupulous lenders aren't taking advantage of the most vulnerable among us, I do so because I genuinely believe it will make the economy stronger for everybody. But I also do it because I know that for far too many neighbors in our country, far too many have been hurt and treated unfairly over the last few years. And I believe in God's command to love thy neighbor as thyself." Unquote. That was Barry quoting the Bible. Have you noticed that Barry Ho rarely says more than five words in a row without pausing? My extremely attractive audio engineer noted last week that Mitt Romney never says more than 3 to 5 word bursts before he pauses. Because they're trying to keep track of all their lies and dissembling. And so every 3 to 5 words, these two bozos have to stop and make sure that they haven't contradicted themselves. That's my suspicion. And so Barry has a tendency to speak in that very halting professorial tone as he speaks to the masses. Anyway, back to the BuzzFeed article. The president said he often falls to his knees in prayer and emphasized the role of his religious values in determining where to lead the country. I think he does fall to his knees on one of those little rugs, you know, and he's got the old bottoms up thing that they got going there in the Muslim world. He falls to his knees, he says. Obama maintained that his call for the wealthiest to give up their tax breaks, he says he's doing so out of economic necessity, but also in line with biblical teachings. Barry says, quote, "And I think to myself, if I'm willing to give something up as somebody who's been extraordinarily blessed and give up some of the tax breaks that I enjoy, I actually think that's going to make economic sense. But for me, as a Christian, it also coincides with Jesus' teaching that for unto whom much is given, much shall be required." Unquote. That's Barack Hussein Obama quoting the Bible. And we think he did it with a straight face, but I doubt anyone in the audience was buying it. Obama also defended foreign aid, noting that it fulfills the biblical requirement to look out for those who cannot speak for themselves. I tell you what, The fact that this man is allowed to say such a thing after a political career in support of killing unborn voiceless children who cannot speak for themselves, Mr. Ho. There's an entire class of citizen who cannot speak for themselves, and you advocate for their brutal butchery. And yet you stand in front of the prayer breakfast and say this, and nobody even throws an egg at you. He should have received a volley of rotten fruit and old scrambled eggs, at the very least. You know, this is why the heathens and atheists, they say, you know, you can make the Bible say whatever you want. You know, and I always tell people when they say that, I say, not at my church, you can't. No. You can't at my church. You make the Bible say what it says, but you can't make it say whatever you want. But ladies and gentlemen, when religious leaders are willing to sit still at a prayer breakfast and listen to this be spouted by this man and utter not a single word, then we are at a point where the atheists and the heathens have a valid point. If people who claim to be religious leaders, who claim to be Christians, people who claim to be Jews, even people who claim to be Muslims are willing to sit and listen to this man and utter not a peep and not point out the hypocrisy and the lies, then why would any heathen and why would any atheist take us seriously, ladies and gentlemen? Yeah, I can't disagree with that point that the atheists bring up. All right, on to the politics file. Do I even want to do any more of this? I tell you what. I do, but because there's a lot of important... What's that?
When you did the Obama... It was like
I was trying to do that. Because Barry tends to whistle when he talks.
Oh, he does? Oh, uh-huh. Okay. I thought it was the teeth. Okay. I thought it was... Okay. Okay.
Because we do have a lot going on, I've got a story from the politics file... From foreignpolicy.com, the cable.foreignpolicy.com, top Obama administration officials briefed 8 senior senators last week on a pending deal to transfer as many as 5 Taliban prisoners from the U.S. detention facility at Gitmo to Qatar. So Barry Ho and his minions are talking about releasing Taliban leaders before the war has been lost, which they're working on that feverishly. Carl Levin, a Democrat, told reporters last week that the briefing was, quote, about the ongoing Taliban reconciliation efforts, unquote. Levin says he's open to the idea of transferring Taliban members to Qatar, but he says the devil is in the details. Mr. Levin, the devil is in your black little heart, and the devil is sitting in the Oval Office, as far as I'm concerned. Levin said he didn't know what the United States was getting in exchange for transferring the prisoners to Qatar. He doesn't know. It doesn't seem to make any sense on its face to be releasing the very people who are directing the attacks against our troops in Afghanistan. The very people who caused the current crisis, the Taliban. I have a theory, though. While you and I may not know exactly what we're getting for this deal, there's a good chance that a couple of million dollars are going to flow into the DNC coffers for the upcoming election, so Barry knows exactly what he's getting, in my humble opinion. And it's only an opinion. It just doesn't make any sense any other way, at least not to me. Now listen to this. If you thought that was bad, Leon Panetta, defense secretary, I have to spit every time I say that because it leaves a horrible taste in my mouth. This is from the NationalJournal.com. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta has spouted off that the U.S. will end its combat mission in Afghanistan in 2013, a year earlier than previously stated. This statement has surprised key U.S. allies, alarmed many Afghans, and forced the White House to spend more than a day trying to walk it back. Walk it back. This is a phrase I've been seeing more and more, especially in the Ho administration. Walk it back. Do you know what that means? Walk it back? What that is a euphemism for what you do when you tell a lie. When you tell a lie and you're caught in a lie, you have to try to walk it back. And so now this is now acceptable vernacular for the highest reaches of government, that they have to walk things back. Well, it's embarrassing at the least. quite possibly criminal and definitely unethical and immoral, that our leaders, who we trust with our national security, are having to walk it back. White House, that, because they were lying about the 2014 deadline. What they really want is they want to take political advantage of ending the war. And so their lie has been exposed, and so they're busy now walking it back. White House spokeswalker Jay Carney, he said that Panetta is not trying to announce a substantive change in American policy. However, Panetta's comments caught officials from Afghanistan and many European countries off guard. Senior European NATO diplomats told Reuters that Panetta has, quote, not said explicitly that the U.S. will end its combat role in 13, but there will be a shift. But he hasn't said what the shift will be or when the shift will begin or when the shift will end. A senior Afghan security official says that Panetta's statement, quote, throws out the whole transition plan. So the plan to lose the war in 2014 has now been pushed back, walked back, so to speak. They're going to now lose the war in 2013. According to the article, Panetta's remarks will give the administration the chance to say that it ended the Iraq war and will effectively begin the Afghan war, bring the Afghan war to a close next year, a message that could resonate with a broad swath of voters. So that's really what it's all about, folks. It's about politics. And apparently, Americans are generally okay with losing wars now. We're okay with spilling the blood of our finest young men without victory. Are we okay with that, folks? Are we really okay with that? Because I'm not okay with that. If that is the case, that a broad swath of voters is okay with losing the wars just to see them end, then it is this house that will fall, and great will be the fall of it. I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview, and while we don't tolerate commercial interruption, we will tolerate guitar solos like that any day of the week. Put those guitars away, boys. It's time to get back to the news. Now, we're rounding third and headed for home, ladies and gentlemen. I got more than I don't know what to do, so let me just get to it. From WorldNet Daily, the Iranian government, through a website proxy, has laid out the legal and religious justification for the destruction of Israel and the slaughter of its people. Calling Israel a danger to Islam, the conservative website Aleph, with ties to Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, said the opportunity must not be lost to remove what they call Israel, quote, this corrupting material, to kill all the Jews and annihilate Israel, and in that, the Islamic government of Iran must take the helm. Not a surprise, right, out of the mad mullahs there in Iran. What bothers me is that WorldNet Daily calls the website conservative, and they go on to say that in an article written by Alireza Forghani, a conservative analyst at the strategy and a strategy specialist in the Khamenei camp, that just bothers me. A Muslim religious fanatic hell-bent on ushering in Armageddon is not a conservative, and you people at WorldNet Daily should know it. What are you, just reprinting talking points? Didn't you people go to journalism school? Haven't you been taught to think for yourselves and edit when the morons call things conservative that are not conservative? I'm ashamed of you, Joseph Farah. Please, have a little tighter editorial control. You know who they need to edit their articles? They need Josh Craddock from over there at the UN. They need that guy in here to help define conservative for these people, for crying out loud. Like I said, ladies and gentlemen, don't look to Washington. Don't even look to the pulpit. The only hope we have is that God raises up another generation that has not been corrupted by the wandering in the wilderness. Anyway, that'd probably be a demotion for Mr. Craddock. to have to go to WorldNet Daily and be an editor. He's working on taking over the UN, from what I understand. Anyway, well, you'll hear more about him later, folks. You may not know exactly who he is yet. Just keep your ears peeled. All right, from the War File, U.S. intelligence agencies believe Iran is prepared to launch terrorist attacks inside the United States. Director and inept buffoon of National Intelligence James Clapper said in testimony that an alleged Iranian plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador was uncovered last year reflects an aggressive new willingness within the upper ranks of the Islamic Republic to authorize attacks against the United States, even on American soil. Clapper said in the testimony, the United States is entering what he calls, quote, a critical transition phase for the terrorist threat, in which smaller bore strikes from regional nodes are more likely than elaborate mass casualty plots. He says if the pressure, I don't care what he says. Get out of here, Mr. Clapper. You're just noticing this now, and you're working for the government? For crying out loud. It's unbelievable. All right, now, so obviously the upper echelons of power and government here in the United States have devolved to complete incompetence and buffoonery. And we've just got to hope the same thing hasn't happened in Israel. Let's go to Haaretz.com, the Israeli newspaper. Vice Prime Minister and Strategic Affairs Minister Moshe Ya'alon was speaking of the possibility of a military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. He said, quote, the West has the ability to strike, but as long as Iran isn't convinced that there's a determination to follow through with it, they'll continue with their manipulations. The Iranians believe that a determination is not there, both in regards to military action and in regards to sanctions. That's according to Mr. Ya'alon. He says, quote, any facility protected by humans can be infiltrated by humans. It's possible to strike all of Iran's facilities, and I say that out of my experience as IDF chief of staff. So, according to Haaretz, Mr. Ya'alon's comments counter remarks by U.S. defense officials last week, saying that we don't have the conventional arms strong enough to destroy all of Iran's nuclear facilities. You remember that? We talked about that last week. Well, maybe what Mr. Ya'alon is saying is we have the ability to strike all of their facilities. And if you'll notice, he left out the word conventional. So hopefully, you know, the Israelis have allegedly been sitting on all those nuclear bombs for all these years. And maybe it's going to take a nuclear strike to take out Iran's nuclear ambitions. And if that's the case, ladies and gentlemen, where is my story? Back to my Ayatollah kill all the Jews story. Listen to this. All of you Occupy types, Ron Paul supporters, all of those who are so upset about preemptive war. Here, listen to this, you people. This Khomeini puppet, he says, quote, defensive jihad could take place when Islam is threatened. Did you get that? He then quotes Shiite's first Imam Ali, who stated the following. Imam Ali, who's like the 13th or maybe the 14th holiest imam in Shiite Islam, and he may only be like the 5th or 6th holiest in Sunni. I'm not sure how that all breaks down. He's one holy guy as far as the Muslims are concerned. He says, quote, waging war against the enemies with whom war is inevitable, and there is a strong possibility that in the near future they will attack Muslims. It is a must and the duty of Muslims to attack. So, ladies and gentlemen, the Muslims already have a philosophy of preemptive war. In fact, they've been instigating it for 1,000 years. So for all of you who whine about preemptive strikes, just get out of here with that. All right. Now that I've got you worked up and worried about the Iranians and the fact that a nuclear exchange is going to happen, ladies and gentlemen, it's coming. Now let's turn our attention toward the homeland. This is from USA Today. Two recent papers highlight a new shift in scientific thinking. One looked at a Death Valley volcano. I said a volcano. Yes, I've changed the subject from Islamic fanatics nuclear attack to volcanoes. Sorry, that was sort of an abrupt segue there. But one study looked at a Death Valley volcano thought to be 10,000 years old and found that it last erupted just 800 years ago, and it is still in eruption danger. Another study found that the large caldera volcanoes, such as the one under Crater Lake in Oregon, can recharge in a matter of decades rather than the thousands of years previously thought. One of the scientists in charge of volcano monitoring in California for the USGS, he says, quote, "These two papers are very nice examples of good scientific work." So, folks, these scientists are saying, look, these volcanoes that we thought had been asleep for 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 years, maybe not. Yeah. These scientists first, the first paper, it looked at the Yubi Hibi. It's at the northern end of California's Death Valley. It's about a half mile wide, 700 feet deep. It was long believed to have been caused by a volcanic eruption sometime in the past 10,000 years. However, researchers looked at the beryllium in the rocks and were able to date the last series of eruptions to just 800 years ago, and they say the ingredients necessary for another eruption are still there. Back to USA Today, the relatively recent eruption means that magma underground, which can take thousands of years to cool, is likely still hot. Did you catch that? If this magma is under the ground and it takes thousands of years to cool, why is it still hot? Could it be that maybe the Earth isn't more than 10,000 years old? Maybe this magma hasn't been sitting down there as long as the evolutionary scientists would have you believe. But what really concerns me, ladies and gentlemen, according to USA Today, scientists worry that caldera volcanoes such as Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines, Krakatoa in Indonesia, may be able to blow much more quickly than previously believed. Caldera volcanoes consist of a large underground lake of magma. As more magma builds up, the pressure builds and the magma starts getting pushed upwards through the cracks in the Earth's surface. When the pressure gets too great, it explodes. Scientists are calling for greater monitoring, including satellite surveillance, to detect ground swelling. I think that's a great idea. You know, all you old earthers, get with the program. I know that my friend Bob Enyart and Fred Williams on the Real Science Friday program have called for better monitoring of earthquakes. And here we've got scientists calling for better monitoring of volcanoes. And this takes us right back to the Bible, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go to... Let's go to Romans. In the 8th chapter, Paul, the apostle, writes, he says this, he says, "For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." So Paul wrote that a couple thousand years ago. And these scientists are just waking up to the fact that Paul knew what he was talking about. Finally, there are several large and still active calderas in the United States, including the one under Yellowstone National Park. I did a story on that a year or two ago. I mean, that could level five states, for crying out loud. And the reason is that the Earth is not so old and it's not so stable, ladies and gentlemen. And the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. All right. So now I'm worried about Iranians. I'm worried about volcanoes. I'm worried about Colorado, ladies and gentlemen, because God is giving Colorado an opportunity for a third time and with an open hand to choose life. And I fear for the future of my state if that offer is rejected. I fear. All right. I've gone over already, and I said I wouldn't go over. Well, we're going to go over just a little bit, folks. Let's see. I'll do this. I'll get rid of this. I'll get rid of that. I'll get rid of that. And I'll close with that. Okay. So just a little bit more, folks. Bear with me. Let's go to Cairo from CNN. They had a soccer riot in Egypt. At last count, 75 people died. In this soccer riot, a committee will investigate the circumstances that caused the deadly riot, according to officials in Egypt. If there are officials in Egypt anymore, when the referee blew the final whistle, the score was Al Masri 3 and Al Ahly 1. But thousands of Al Masri fans stormed the pitch despite their home team's hard-fought victory. So why did the winners storm the field and start slashing, hacking, and killing the fans of the other team. Well, it indicates to me, and I'm not all that hip to what's going on in the Egyptian soccer world, it indicates to me that this was a planned attack. This was a political event more than it was just a riot. And you know, that this is how throwback savages, and I'll say it, this is how throwback savages in Muslim nations have settled their political differences for centuries. And the democrophiles, you know, out there, they think democracy's going to help. Oh, democracy's wonderful for Egypt. But when the masses are evil and wicked and throwback savages, democracy's not going to help. It's only going to exacerbate the situation. Well, like what we saw at this soccer riot in Egypt last week. Not to be outdone, ladies and gentlemen, we go to the Daily Mail in London. Police were called to a troubled Texas high school after another major brawl erupted in the cafeteria. Cell phone video provided to the Daily Mail showed students at Andy DeCaney High School throwing wild punches in a crowded cafeteria. Yeah. So that's, by the way, that's not Egypt or Baghdad or Homs or Afghanistan. This is Texas. Yeah. I believe around the Houston area. The Daily Mail goes on to tell us that in November, a school district police officer pepper sprayed students to break up another large-scale fight on campus. And in May, two students were hospitalized after an outbreak of rioting at the school. The string of chaotic fights, according to the Daily Mail, at the school has sparked concern among parents. So is this what it takes to get you public school parents to wake up? Riots? A melee, for crying out loud? What about the teaching of situational ethics and survival of the fittest? What about the teaching of sex without love or consequences? Not to mention the lack of teaching of reading and writing and arithmetic. Is this what it takes, you people? Riots? It's a wonder the country hasn't slid straight down to hell in a handbasket already. Completely, I should say. All right, finally. Finally, from Washington, D.C. Authorities say 11 people have been arrested in Washington's McPherson Square since park police began clearing away tents from one of the nation's last remaining Occupy sites. Yes, I know. Cry a tear for the occupiers as they're being swept away. One of those arrested was charged with felony assault on a police officer and assault with a deadly weapon. That person is accused of hitting a police officer in the face with a brick. Yeah. As Occupy Washington, three others were charged with assault on a police officer. Officials are continuing to clear the park. Let's see. The protesters have vowed to continue their movement and urged followers to remain nonviolent. I guess they didn't notice the brick in the face of the police. Officials are continuing to clear the park of unsanitary conditions and unsanitary people, I might add. And, you know, violent, rebellious, youthful fools who should be beaten within an inch of their lives if they refuse to disperse, in my humble opinion. And it is just an opinion, but that's what this is all about, folks. This is the Weekly Worldview. It's my worldview, and I'm glad you tuned in. I'm glad to have had you here, but that's it for this week. That's all I've got, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, Personhood USA, Colorado Right to Life, Personhood Colorado, my good friends at Theology Online, and of course, as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.